Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Debbie Gale Zane. Debbie has been through unimaginable tragedy and come through it with inspiring strength. She received the call that is every parent's worst nightmare. Her 26-year-old son, Alex, had been found dead. Just 9 years prior to that, he had been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder and became addicted to drugs and alcohol. Throughout her journey as a single mom of three, she went through many challenges with Alex's mental illness and addiction, and she supported him, fought for him, and loved him through his journey. Today, Debbie inspires others who are facing the challenges of having a child with mental illness and addiction, or who have lost a child. She walks with them on their journey, helping them regain their natural emotional resilience and self-love, and find peace and purpose in their lives. Debbie has developed a unique process called Peace Beyond the Pain, which provides holistic tools and strategies for navigating grief, loss, pain, hopelessness, fear, and guilt. Debbie is also the author of the book, Finding Peace and Purpose Amidst the Tears, My Journey of the Love and Loss of My Son Through His Mental Illness and Addiction, and is the host of the internet TV podcast show, Finding Peace Beyond Pain, on the Bold, Brave TV network. Debbie, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is an absolute pleasure having you as a guest contributor today.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I'm happy to be here.
And I have to say that I had the privilege of being a guest on your TV show, and it was a great experience for my listeners and viewers who will see this on YouTube. Tune into her show. It's live streamed. And you can also find it on YouTube. She has some really inspirational guests. She does a great job. And it's just a show that I would highly recommend everybody tune into.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure having you as a guest on my show.
Oh, yeah. I had a blast. It was just a great, natural, organic conversation. And I hope we can come close to duplicating that today. So
absolutely.
So, Debbie, my first question for you is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path.
Yeah, the biggest experiences that have shaped my life path is my journey with my oldest son, Alex. When he was 26 years old, I received the call that is every parent's worst nightmare, that he was found dead. And this came after an almost decade-long journey where he was battling serious mental illness. He was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, and he later became addicted to drugs and alcohol. And both experiences, the first experience almost 10 years prior to losing him, where he had come to me and told me that he wanted to kill himself and described exactly how he wanted to do it and admitted that he had even tried it. As a parent, that is just such a hard thing to hear from your child. And it came seemingly out of the blue. I didn't see signs of it coming. And this led to a really long hospitalization and diagnosis of schizoaffective disorder. And that began this life-changing ordeal for my family. And that experience, going through that journey with him and then losing him at the age of 26, losing a child is the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with in my entire life. And I've had other difficult circumstances, and these things have really changed me as a person. They've changed my life, and they actually, through them, I have found meaning.
I also know that you raised Alex as a single parent. What were the challenges specifically raising a child who had challenges with mental illness and addiction as a single parent?
Yeah, the biggest challenge as a single parent is just not having that support by another adult who has that same interest as you, as a parent who's just as concerned, who's just as worried, who was just as involved. And because I had two other children, but they were younger than Alex, so they were in their mid to early teens at the time when he was first diagnosed. So it's not like they could be a support to me. I still had to be a support to them, a mom to them as well. And that was also a really big challenge, is having a child with mental illness and addiction. And then you also need to take care of yourself enough to be there for not just that child that needs you, but your other two children that need you. And being that I was a single mom and the kids lived with me 100% of the time, they occasionally visited their dad. It was rare. I had them all the time. I was mom and dad to them. I know my daughter used to say to me, not only happy Mother's Day, but happy Father's Day, because I was both. And some of the specific challenges when you have a child with mental illness is I spent the first couple of years not sleeping well, living in fear, worrying about his well-being, worrying about his illness and his side effects and his symptoms. And is he suicidal? Is he self-harming? When he got into drugs, that just made it all the more hard, all the more difficult, more worry, more sleepless nights, more pain for me, until I realized that I wasn't really present. I wasn't living my life. My whole life, moment to moment, was depending on how Alex was doing. And I was able to fortunately take back my life and find more peace for myself and be able to be present and take care of myself. It was really challenging, especially as a single mom. I had friends that were supportive. I was a member of Al-Anon, but it still isn't the same as when you're a single parent, having that other person who specifically has that interest of your child at heart.
The other thing, and I can imagine that we have specific expectations and assumptions, I think, when we become parents. We think about having a child that may have specific challenges, but I think we compartmentalize that and hope that we're going to get a child that's going to develop normally, that's going to have all 10 toes and 10 fingers. But one of the things that I believe parents who have a child with have a history of mental illness and addiction is their dreams for their child become very compartmentalized a day at a time. Are they going to wake up and find out that their child has overdosed or has had a mental health crisis? And a day where that doesn't happen has to be like a victory in and of itself. So I would think that there's also that grief of losing your expectations of what parenting was supposed to be like as well too.
Yeah, that's honestly a huge factor, is realizing that you do have this loss to grieve, even though your child is still living, because they are different than they were before their illness and addiction. They act different, their behavior's different, their capabilities are different. Life looks different. Your hopes and dreams for them, their own hopes and dreams for themselves, the path that they're on, everything has changed and looks differently than it did. And that is actually a loss that needs to be recognized and dealt with and grieved, and allowing yourself to actually work through those emotions, allowing yourself to feel those emotions so that you can get through them to the other side. That's actually a really important process on the journey to finding peace.
Mm-hmm. Please tell our audience about your son, Alex.
Yeah, so he was such a wonderful, sweet, kind, protective person. He was very unique, really cared about his family, really close with myself and his two other siblings, and really cared about us, was protective of us. I think they didn't grow up with a father in the household, so he took on that protection, and he really cared about other people. He loved to take walks and be outside all the time, and he would talk to everybody. He would make friends with everyone. And I remember he would have a number of friends that were homeless, and he just had a really big heart, and he loved, besides loving family and getting excited whenever family was going to be getting together, he also loved religion, but not one specific one. He jumped from religion to religion. He'd spend anywhere from a few months to a few years on a religion and then move on and sometimes return to one. But he was always very passionate about it and learned everything that there was to know. And he also, another thing that he loved was studying genetics for fun. So he really didn't do so well in college. He took a few classes and it didn't work out because of his illness, but he taught himself so much online from about age 14 on. And he had the passion for learning about genetics for the rest of his life until age 26. That never went away. And also the other thing he loved, this was more before he came down with the schizoaffective disorder, but he was always big into sports. He spent from about age 4 or 5 playing soccer, and that evolved to travel soccer. And then in high school, he got into track and cross country, and he was just really passionate about those things.
One of the things that just occurred to me is not everybody in our audience might know what schizoaffective disorder is. Can you explain what it was that Alex was diagnosed with?
Yeah, absolutely. Schizoaffective disorder is a cross between schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, in that you can have symptoms of both. And so he had hallucinations, both visual and auditory, and he had paranoia, which those can be symptoms of schizophrenia, but he also had the mood disorder component of bipolar. So he could go between depression and mania. Now, in the beginning, he had both, but I would say in the later years, it was more the depression that he had problems with.
Thank you for that explanation as well. The other thing is that, and I've expressed this on other podcasts before, there's such a stigma around both addiction and mental health, where individuals society may look at it in a very negative fashion, and individuals that have addiction and mental health are hesitant asking for help because of the stigma attached for asking for help. It's like a catch-22. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I really impress upon individuals is that the person's diagnosis is not who they are. It's what they've been diagnosed with. We don't compromise a person's self-esteem while treating mental health challenges or addiction challenges. For me, it's important to understand that, for individuals to understand that these are beautiful individuals, these are talented individuals, these are highly creative, passionate, bright, inquisitive individuals who have danced with a disease and mental health challenges that they just could not get away from totally. And it's important to understand that these individuals are more than their diagnosis.
Absolutely. And that is something that I also help parents to see as well, because so many times they get caught up in the child's behavior, because many times with mental illness, they can go into have psychotic episodes and they can behave in various ways, lash out in anger. Same thing with if they're using substances, and this can cause differences in their behavior that they might not do. And it's easy, I think, for parents to get caught up in the moment of my child is being aggressive, my child is being lashing out at me in anger, they're saying all these things. And it's important to not take these things personally. Like, your child did not want this illness just as much as you don't want them to have this illness. And it's not their fault, just like it's not It's not the parents' fault and it's not the child's fault. And like you said, just see their child as a whole person, so much more than they are not their illness or their addiction. They are still that same soul inside of them. It's just what you're seeing coming out in their physical body because of the illness and the addiction. But deep down, they still have the same soul, their same heart, and you can still connect to that. And so it is so important to see that child as a whole person.
Exactly. To see the totality of their life. To see that, and there may have been times that individuals with addiction and mental health challenges had a remission of symptoms where they were sober, where they were managing their mental health symptoms very effectively. And during those times, they did some really great, meaningful work to help others. They were, very much connected to their family, and all of their wonderful qualities came out. That cannot be lost when we look at the totality of the life of anybody who has experienced mental health and addiction challenges. The whole picture has to be taken into account.
Absolutely. Yeah. And going back to what you said also about the stigma, is I feel like the stigma has a lot to do with impacting how lonely the parents can feel. So this can be a lonely journey, I think, because so many times parents feel like it's only me going through this. They look at other families out there. They look at other kids out there. And from the outside, things seem normal. Things seem like they're going on the path they had hoped for their child. And so it can be really difficult. And due to the stigma, they may be afraid to tell others. They may be afraid to reach out for help or for support.
And I think in order for individuals with addiction and mental health challenges to truly put their symptoms into remission and engage in a life of recovery, and also for the family members and friends, there needs to be support mechanisms in place, whether it's Al-Anon or Naranon or Cocaine Anonymous or the other type of support groups. That type of quality support plus quality therapy, I think, improves the outcomes for both individuals with mental health and addiction challenges and for their families as well, too. I can never underestimate the importance of that combination to help individuals get through that and similar type of challenges.
Yeah, it's so important. Just like your child needs help, you need help too as a parent and support. And it's just so important. NAMI is also another great organization. Yep. That is a great support for those who have a child with mental illness.
Now, NAMI, that's the National Alliance for Mental Illness?
Yes.
Okay. What are some other unique challenges that a parent who has a child with mental health and addiction issues faces? Is there anything else? I know you've covered some of them. Is there anything else that needs to be addressed?
Honestly, a really big challenge that they face is taking the time out to take care of themselves, because they're so focused on everything happening with their child, and it's easy to run out of energy for this to be all consuming and to spend all of their energy and all of their focus on, like I said, that moment to moment of how your child is doing, what they're doing, if they're using drugs, if they're not, if they're taking their medication for their illness. It's so easy to get so wrapped up in that you're not taking care of yourself at all. And it's really important to do that. It's really important to adopt self-love and self-care as a way of being, as a way of life for you, because if you get that depleted and that exhausted and running out of resources, you're not in a position to not only not take care of you, but you cannot take care of your child. You cannot be the strength that your child who's ill needs. And if you have other children that you have to take care of as well, it's going to be really difficult. So it's so important. I honestly think that's the biggest challenge, is for them to learn to be able to take care of themselves, and for them to be able to not to live in fear, to learn that there's a different way, that they don't have to, live in this day-to-day fear. We can shift our focus and Those are really some of the biggest challenges, I think.
And you mentioned a really good point about not living in fear. And to me, that gets into, you know, learning how to develop autonomy amidst the chaos. So this is going to segue into my next question, is that how do parents develop their own lives, their own autonomy, while dealing with their children's addiction and mental health challenges?
Yeah, so I think we've touched on some of the things. And the one big thing, like I said, is to really start to take care of yourself. Because think about it, when you have a situation that is a big, not even big, think of some of our day-to-day challenges, right? There can be something that happens. Maybe here's an example. I recently was getting a glass out of my kitchen cabinet and I dropped it and it broke and there was glass everywhere shattered off the kitchen. And I noticed that I was calm about it. I wasn't happy about it because there was glass everywhere and it would mean that I needed to start the day later because I had to take a half an hour to clean it all up and vacuum the little pieces and everything. But I also thought to myself that when I am in a place where I am so depleted of energy and so stressed and not taking care of myself, I can just lose it with something like that, like a day-to-day thing. And so think about the big things we go through with our child who has mental illness and addiction. And you can use this analogy where is if you are really taking good care of yourself and you are adopting this self-love and self-care as a way of being, as a way of life, then you are going to navigate these challenges that come up from a much better place. You are going to have more strength, more resources to deal with it. It doesn't mean that it's not going to impact you. Of course, it's going to impact you. Of course, there's still going to be crises. There's still going to be challenges. But you are going to be in so much better of a place. And you're going to be so much more helpful to your child, to all of your children, because they look up to you, whether you think they do or not, whether you're at odds with them or not, you are still a role model. And that gets me into another thing too, for how to really find that point. Answer to your question is shifting your focus from what you have no control over to things that you can do, because so many times we are spending a lot of our time focused on things that we have no control over, like focused on making our child do this, getting them to stop using drugs and alcohol, making them take their meds, trying to make them do things that we want them to do, trying to make everything all better. And we don't have that kind of power. When we don't have power over something, but we try to control it, this becomes a really frustrating battle. Again, it's going to deplete us. It's going to deplete our energy. It's going to take the focus away from things that can bring us more peace. So whenever you focus on things that you can do rather than things that you can't do, it's going to be more empowering for you. So for example, you can, for your child, you can be an inspiration for them by taking good care of yourself, by keeping yourself strong, being a good support to them and your other children. You're able to do this when you are spending more time focused on these things that you can do. You can be a support to them. You can be a source of love and compassion for them and companionship. You can be an advocate for them. There are definitely things that you can do. But when you focus on the things you can do, everybody is going to be better off. Your child and you are going to have more peace for yourself because you are not going to be depleted by running out of resources. You're going to feel more empowered. So your life is going to feel more meaningful because you're going to feel like, as a parent, we feel like we want to make everything better for our child. We want to fix everything, but we don't have that power. But when we focus on the powers we do have, that's when we're going to start to feel better. The other thing that is really a big thing is guilt. So many times that's another thing, is releasing that guilt, because so many times parents feel guilty and they may do this to themselves because they feel like they failed. I've talked to parents who just felt that they failed as a parent because of what their child is going through. And sometimes this can be even exacerbated because when their child is in a certain state with their drugs or their illness and they lash out, they may blame the parent. So that just further exacerbates the guilt. These are all things I'm mentioning are actually part of my program that I help parents with, the self-care and the self-love and the trying to figure out what we have control over and what we don't and what we can focus on. But also releasing the guilt is just, it's really big, and it's something that parents suffer from a lot, just because we want to be a good parent and we think it's all of our responsibility, and we tend to take an over responsibility of what's ours and what really isn't ours. And some of the other things that can really help to bring more peace is that we have a lot of difficult emotions coming up when we're going through this. And we touched on this a little bit when we talked about grieving the loss while they're still alive, the loss of how things were and how our child was, how life was prior to illness and addiction. But this is really important because anytime that we don't allow our feelings the space to come up and we push them down, they don't go away. They're just going to keep resurfacing. And the only way to really get through them to the other side is to feel them. And so to understand them, to understand these different stages of grief, to make sense of our feelings, of what we're going through, and normalize them and make them okay, that this is a stage, this is the feelings that we're going through that we need to go through to get to the other side.
And yes, grief is meant to be expressed, and the feelings that are associated with grief are meant to be expressed and not suppressed. Excellent points, excellent strategies that you have to help parents find peace beyond the pain. And I know that is the title of your program, that you promote, or you expose your parents who request services from you to. And I think it's great. I think those are all great components. I love the part about focusing on those things you can't control, because as parents, regardless of how our children have transitioned or died or passed on, however you conceptualize death, we always have some type of responsibility that if we did things differently, if we maybe were more attentive to the signs, if we maybe loved them more, things could have changed. But the bottom line is that we did the best we could given the hands of cards that we were dealt with. Yep. And parents who have children who have had addiction and mental health challenges, it's all about love. They never stop loving them. They love them through it, if anything. And they have nothing to feel guilty about. They did everything that they did out of love. They could not control something that, even for the person, for Alex and others like him, they had no control over themselves.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, is that when we work on guilt, knowing that, like you said, we did the best we could throughout with what we knew and the resources we had. We can only do our best. We're only human. And that's all that we can do. And being able to come from that place of love, like you said, is actually a really powerful place to come from. Love is such a great power. And that's another actual part that I work on with parents, that increasing the connection with your child. Because when you increase that connection and you strengthen the relationship and you strengthen that love, that is such a more powerful place. And yeah, you can't change your child, but you can still change the dynamic that's going on.
And you can attempt to model good behavior for them too, to model self-care, to model sober living habits. And sometimes that's more powerful than words.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because words aren't going to, it's really hard. You're not going to really be able to come from this place where you're telling your child what to do. That's not going to go over well. And you don't that's the other thing, is you don't want to get into this place with your child where the whole relationship becomes about the problem. You don't want it to, the whole relationship to always be, you're always talking about their illness. You're always talking about the addiction. That's not a relationship. That's not a relationship for any type of relationship. It can't always be about the problems. There has to be so much more to it.
Yeah, there has to be, again, we have to look at the total person. We have to look at what they've accomplished, what they're doing well. And it isn't always about their deficiencies or their challenges.
Exactly.
Tell our audience what and who inspired you to write your book, Finding Peace and Purpose Amidst the Tears, and what do you hope readers will take away from it?
Yeah, so not long after losing Alex, I was guided to open an email about a Hay House book writing course. Having no idea why I was supposed to open this, I signed up for the workshop and I listened to it. And by the end of it, I knew that I was supposed to write this book to share my journey of the love and loss of my son through his mental illness and addiction with the world. My hope for it is to help parents going through something similar to not feel alone, and to give them hope for peace and healing and the inspiration to go on. And all of the experiences that I share in it and all of the details all flowed to me from my son. So this book connected me again with my son. And he was just as much a part of writing this book as I was. And everything, the way the chapters were supposed to be laid out, the table of contents, everything flowed to me from Alex on all those early sleepless nights. And this is something I feel really passionate about, is that parents to not feel alone on their journey and give them hope that you can find peace and you can have a closer relationship with your child. And so that is my hope for readers. And
the other thing is that the relationship with your son did not die because his physical body did. It's still very strong. The bond is still there. And obviously, you really felt his guiding hand in writing this book. So essentially, you two co-authored this together.
Absolutely.
And I think that's also an extension for me of the creativity he showed during his physical life. He was very creative. He was very inquisitive. And he would be the type of person, as with many individuals who are non-conventional thinkers, free spirits. These are individuals you don't tell what to do. You don't tell free spirits what to do. You just guide them. You point out paths and allow them to make the decision that is going to be best for them. Even though you may not think it's best for them, you have to allow them to be adults. One of the things for me, and you know my history, obviously, with my own daughter, with Janine, who transitioned over 21 years ago due to a rare form of cancer, she was a free spirit. And I just basically learned to guide her and not reel her in. And I truly believe that she's a part now of everything that I do. And I've discovered that love can truly exist from the other side, and that relationships don't die because the physical body do.
Yeah.
Or does.
Right. No, I had the same experience with my son. He is always with me. He was, like you said, he's just as much a co-author of this book as I am. And the wonderful thing is he always wanted to help other people, but with his illness and addiction, I think it was a lot harder. And now he is helping others through me. So he is always with me. Whatever I'm doing to help parents, whether it's coaching parents, whether it's speaking, whether it's a media interview, a book signing, a podcast guest, or the show that I now have, Finding Peace Beyond the Pain, he is with me. And I talk to him out loud. I always ask him to guide me, to be with me, to help bring others to me that need our message. And so he is just as much a part of this and is working through me to help others. And it's so true what you said about the love lives on, even though their physical body isn't here. And of course, there's so many days that I miss having him here physically, but I am so grateful for the relationship that I do have now with him. I was always really close with him during his lifetime, so I'm so glad that he's always with me and we can maintain that closeness. I talk out loud to him every single day, and I think I told you I started getting signs from him early on after he passed away, and that's been beautiful.
The relationship now, Debbie, that we share with our children is pure in spirit, it's pure in heart, it's pure in love. It's devoid of any of the human contracts and conflicts that we had that may have gotten in the way of our relationships.
That is so true. Absolutely.
Debbie, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
That life is precious and we never know how much time we or anyone else has. And so to really make the most of it and to think about those, our loved ones, and how much they mean to us and what we can be grateful for and how we can be present with them and how we can be more loving and show our love and focus more on that love than the fear or the anger or these other things that are going on as well, but how we can really come from a place of love and connect with our loved ones, connect with their hearts.
That is beautiful and very well said. And I agree. I think showing and expressing and understanding what we are grateful for in our lives on a day-to-day basis can help us get through some of the tougher moments that we are going to go through as we grieve the losses of our loved ones. Very well said, and thank you for that. My last question for you. People want to get in touch with you. They want to purchase your book. They want to find out more about your television show. What is the best way for them to do that?
Everything is located at my main website, which is DebbieGaleCoaching.com. There's a page where it links to my book website. You want to go directly to the book website, it's just DebbieGaleZane.com. But the Debbie Gale Coaching has a page for my book. It's got a page that will tell you about my show, Finding Peace Beyond the Pain. You can click on it, get to where you can find prior episodes. You can watch information about the show. The website also has information about how I can help, and it's got a link to connect with me. So that's probably the best place. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Debbie Gale and Debbie Gale Coaching.
And all of that information as well will be in the program notes when the show goes live, both on RSS.com and also on YouTube. So with that, Debbie, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I truly enjoyed our conversation, and I hope we can do this again in the future.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being a part of your show.
And thank you. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.